As Ian's just said, and as you're no doubt well aware, another day, another raft of headlines and harrowing stories of young footballers being abused by adults who held positions of trust and authority at the clubs where victims like Andy Woodward and Ian Ackley, who was on this programme last week, were training. Operation Hydrant, the police investigation into childhood sexual abuse within football, reports that around 350 victims have come forward to report abuse to police and to the NSPCC. To support this inquiry and also to encourage those who might have stayed silent so far to come forward, the FA released a video this week featuring four England players, including Wayne Rooney and Steph Houghton, explaining how parents and children can raise any concerns they have about adults working in football.
I'm here to help ensure every child feels safe playing the sport I love.
There are 8,500 safeguarding officers working across English football to help clubs protect the next generation.
They ensure that adults working directly with children are checked to make sure they are suitable for the role.
These adults include coaches, referees, physios and safeguarding officers, and all are given relevant safeguarding training.
We all ensure children and young people's concerns are heard.
It's important that everyone knows how to raise any concerns about a child's welfare
with the FA, the police or local authority, so that appropriate action can be taken.
If you're a parent, please ask questions at your club to ensure all of this is in place.
If you're a young boy or girl and you're upset, hurt or scared with the way someone behaves with you, please let someone you trust know now.
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 You also heard the voices there of Jack Rutter, the Cerebral Palsy England captain, and Nathaniel Chalabar, the England under 21 captain. Now, the FA is subject to an internal review led by external legal counsel to investigate what information the organisation was aware of at the relevant times around the issues that have been raised in the media. Many have criticised the FA for being slow in responding to such a scandal. Sue Ravenlaw is the FA's head of equality and safeguarding, with responsibility for ensuring the safety of children and young people in a football environment. I went to meet her at the FA offices at Wembley on Friday to speak to her in what is her first in-depth interview about this unfolding crisis.
My reaction has been obviously completely shocked, appalled at the behaviour that has gone on and the impact that that has had on these men as they were boys. So we've been focusing on, you know, how we respond to the victims. We've been in touch with obviously Andy Woodward and his partner. Our approach is to support the sort of victims and survivors, but we have to let the police take precedence in terms of contact with those victims and survivors, and let the interviews that need to take place and the statements that need to take place happen before we can actually be in touch with them. So it's a delicate balance. It is the biggest challenge for the FA and for football, the scale of it, and everybody is taking it incredibly seriously. Really also wanting to reassure people now that the game is different and sport is different now, and much has been put in place over the last sort of 10, 15 years that has built a very different framework so that young people can be involved in the game in a much safer way.
You talked about being shocked. I think everyone would agree with that one. How surprised should we be, though, really, given what's happened in with the Jimmy Savile case, in the various stories within the church, in politics, in all walks of life, really? Why should football be any different? Other sports, too. Why should football be any different? Why are we surprised?
Sadly, I guess, when you put it in that context, it isn't surprising, because football is part of the wider society, and clearly this kind of horrific conduct has been going on across society. So as a head of safeguarding, it's one of those things you have in the back of your mind as something that could happen at some point, and something you prepare as much as you can for, not knowing what that actually means in terms of, you know, people coming forward with non-recent abuse. But when it happens, and when it happens on the scale that it's happened, it's pretty devastating. Firstly, on a human level, in terms of, you know, feeling for those victims and survivors who've obviously been bottling that for such a long time, and having, you know, met one of them in Andy and really experienced, you know, most people will have experienced Andy and others on television or in the radio or through the print media, and it is deeply impacting. So, we feel that, and that's why we have been wanting to, A, you know, message out our strong support and our huge encouragement for anybody else that's suffering out there in silence, whether it's in football or in wider sport or in society. What Andy Woodward and others have done now is immense. You know, the courage they've shown, the bravery, in Andy's case, the leadership, to step up and share what's happened, seems to have liberated so many people, and that is incredible, absolutely incredible. And may that continue for as long as it needs to, for people to be freed of that secrecy and that horrific power that their abusers have had over them.
You've mentioned one word a lot, scale. Have you any idea, has anyone idea how big this scale is, the scale of the problem? Because every day there's a new police force being involved. There are more calls, thousands of calls it would seem, or hundreds of calls certainly at the moment, new cases being reported in the media. How widespread could this issue be?
Well, obviously Operation Hydrant have issued the figures from the middle of the week at 350. We have to take our lead from them because they're actually the people receiving people coming forward and giving their accounts to the police, and that's important. It will be whatever it is, and we collectively will need to deal with that. So I don't think there's any... We can't speculate on scale. It is what it is at the moment, and we will take step by step as that unfolds. I think the important thing is we put something in place that can cope with that, which is why we're talking to much bigger and wider society organisations so that we can actually do that together and at the right time engage the victim, the victims or whoever wants to engage with us in that respect as well. In the first instance, we need to understand from other organisations like the police and government departments, the Home Office, who have dealt with big instances like this in society, with Savile, with Rotherham, etc. We need to learn from that. We don't have that expertise we don't have the expertise, let alone the expertise on the scale that it is. And you know, it's important for us to put a framework in place that is going to be accessible and going to be what people need.
Is this just isolated instance in terms of coaches, just this is what they do and this is how they behaved, or do you think there's something more sinister, more like a paedophile ring or something like that, the groups working together in the country 30, 40 years ago, or maybe even more recently?
That's impossible to say until the facts unfold, and that's really for the police, isn't it, to piece together what's actually happened here and whether they are isolated incidents or whether there was any collaborative activity going on then. Again, no point in speculating. The facts will unfold in due course, and I guess we'll get to see then.
Another concern would be relating to Chelsea at the moment, that are there other instances of clubs trying to cover up allegations of abuse and paying off players? That surely has to be a huge worry, isn't it, to take advantage of someone like that?
You know, again, I think we need to sort of allow the facts to unfold in those. I recognise what's in the media at the moment, and that, victims are coming forward and saying that. The police are obviously involved in that, and that may form part of the QC's inquiry. And so that's something that we just need the facts to sort of unfold for us, and then the FA will act if the facts demonstrate that clubs and others have flouted our regulations or the league's regulations.
And in terms of penalties or punishments, I mean, people were saying we need to have action, something needs to happen. What would you say to those people?
I completely understand the call for people to want some form of action now. And we really get that. It's just really difficult to act when you're not in possession of the facts. You have to have the facts to be able to then take something through a due process so that it can be A, thorough, and B, come out with the appropriate outcome. Whether that's actually a criminal process or it's a regulatory process, the principles are the same.
What reassurance could the FA offer? Parents will be listening to this, taking children to play football Sunday morning. What reassurance could you offer to say this is that was then, this is now. This could never, ever happen. And that's difficult to say in one way because there are always issues, maybe. But what safeguarding principles are there to make sure this cannot happen?
Firstly, thanks for bringing your kids to football. I think it's, it's really important to help people understand that the context in society and in football and everywhere was different then. And the safeguards that began to come in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, were building a framework that's, you know, firmly in place now across different sports. And that's about a cultural awareness of being child-centred, actually listening to children and young people, engaging them, hearing their voice, which clearly is not what was happening back in the 70s, 80s and some of the 90s. So firstly, that's really important. And to do that, you have to have good education programs that are about bringing people's awareness to that, helping them understand how you create safer environments, what's good practice and what's not good practice, what's an absolute no-no in terms of working with young people. You also then use the other safeguards that are around. So we bring in the criminal records checks, using that to screen out anybody that you feel, A, who may be barred criminally from working with children, and B, who on balance looking at that kind of record, you don't feel is appropriate to work with children. So that's in place and wasn't in place before. I think the other thing that we've done in football and we've done across sport is actually build a network of people called, safeguarding or welfare officers across the game. We have 8,500 of them, and they are across the professional game and the grassroots game, and they're, they've had additional training to help them implement these things at local level. So they are responsible with the management committee of those clubs to make sure that all the right people are checked. And we're rolling out 55,000 checks a year in football, which is that's a significant number. And those capture coaches and referees and welfare officers and first aiders and people who drive kids, other people's kids regularly, etc. So that's, one way. And then they also have a look at the training programmes and get people onto our safeguarding children workshops. And we're rolling out 35,000 people through those a season. So you begin to change the culture. And if somebody feels that a child is in immediate risk of harm, then to go directly to the police to make sure that child is protected immediately. I would like to think the culture has changed. I think this is a massive wake-up call for owners and directors across the piece around the responsibilities at every level to do the right thing. I'd like to think that we're doing the right thing, and I'd like to think that others follow that lead. This is a time for transparency and openness, and for us to get things right for children.